Is Alberta a candidate for using geothermal in a big way?
I think it is. Well, it depends on what you mean by a big way. Geothermal energy historically has been limited to tectonically active areas, places where there are volcanoes and earthquakes and stuff like that. We don't have those in Alberta anymore. But recently, in the last 10 or 15 years, that's expanded into geothermal energy production from sedimentary basins. So the technology that we're looking to develop and apply here in Alberta is relatively new technology. And we found through our partnership with Alberta Innovates and the municipalities that we're working with here in the province that there is a substantial quantity of geothermal energy that can be produced as power. And now we're working on technical and economic means to get it out of the ground.
So this project that you did with Alberta Innovates support and the municipalities, what exactly were you addressing?
So a number of high-level studies have been done in the Western Canadian Sedimentary Basin to sort of get a handle on the geothermal resource base. The Geologic Atlas of the Western Canadian Sedimentary Basin, which was published by the Alberta Energy Regulator, has a chapter in it on the geothermal regime of the basin, which is a pretty academic study. Subsequent to that, CanGeo, which is the Canadian Geothermal Energy Association, did what they called, quote, favorability maps, which basically mapped the temperature at various depth horizons throughout the entire province. These sort of built on each other iteratively. Recently, coming from the University of Alberta, there was a study published in 2014 by my predecessor here, that took the temperature data and overlaid assumed reservoirs in the subsurface. So we have a hunch that this formation is a reservoir, meaning it bears water in the pore space. Maybe this formation is a reservoir. We overlaid those reservoir maps onto the temperature maps, and we were able to identify, okay, this might be a suitable resource to develop in this area. For example, the Leduc Formation in Clearwater County. And so we were able to identify where potential reservoirs, high temperatures, and towns intersected. And then we went into those areas and we quantified the amount of power that may be able to be produced from the thermal resources in those areas. So we did that by using oil and gas well data that have porosity and bottom hole temperatures and pressures. And then we did what's called a volumetric assessment, which means we calculated the volume of the reservoir, the volume of the presumed water in the pore space, and then using the temperatures, we can calculate how much thermal energy is in the reservoir, and then we can amortize that out over a few decades to calculate how much power can we produce.
So you actually had quite a few municipalities working with you. Can you list some of them, please?
I can list all of them. So from north to south, we had both the city and the county of Grand Prairie as two separate entities. So there's two there. The Municipal District of Greenview, the City of Hinton, and what they call a tri-council in Clearwater County, which consists of officials from the county, Clearwater, the village of Caroline, and the town of Rocky Mountain House.
So basically, you're looking at areas that are along the foothills?
That's correct. So, the closer we get to the mountains, the deeper the basin gets, and the deeper the basin gets, the deeper we can drill. And so that allows us to access hotter temperatures. For producing electricity in Alberta, we're looking for temperatures at least 100 degrees. But then for direct use of the heat, so if we just wanted to run a greenhouse or heat a house or snow melting is a big use for geothermal heat, we're looking anywhere west of the Edmonton-Calgary corridor has suitable temperatures for that. But to get into temperatures where we want to produce electricity, we have to go pretty much to the western margins of the province.
So actually, it seems that there's a bit of a division between electricity and heat. What would that be?
Well, temperature. To produce electricity with modern technology, like I said, it's not so much based on the temperature, it's based on the temperature differential. So there's a hot side and a cold side to an engine. And to reliably produce electricity in an economic fashion, here in Alberta, we're looking to get a temperature differential of about 100 degrees or more. Since the average ambient air temperature in Alberta is about zero, we look for temperatures about 100 degrees to make electricity. For directly using the heat, we actually only need water that's the temperature that we want to use it at. So to run a greenhouse, for example, which is a major application we look at here in Alberta, we're looking for temperatures at about 60 degrees. To melt snow off a road, which is something that we would like to see instituted, the city of Edmonton pays tens of millions of dollars a year to remove snow from the road. For that, we really only need water that's maybe 40 degrees Celsius, which is 1,500 meters below our feet right here, pretty shallow. So it's mostly a temperature thing. Another thing that we talk about is what's called cascading use, which is that if we have a higher temperature resource, 120, 130 degrees, we can make electricity with the high end of that, cool the water down from 120 degrees to maybe 80 or 90 degrees, and then use that heat directly to heat a building or to run a greenhouse or a spa, you name it, you know, whatever you can think of that needs heat. So that adds a lot of economic value to the electricity play, which right now in Alberta can be marginal, partially due to the costs of producing the geothermal energy, but then also largely due to the way that electricity is bought and sold in Alberta.
Well, it almost seems like we've got lots of electricity, and then if there's more and more people looking to solar and feeding into the grid, it almost sounds like you wouldn't really need it for electricity, do you?
That's a great question. So there's different qualities of renewable energy. Wind and solar are intermittent energy sources. Solar is only there when the sun is shining. Wind is only there when the wind is blowing. Geothermal is what's called the baseload source of energy, meaning it's always there. It's independent of environmental conditions. And so geothermal is the only non-combustion-based renewable energy available to Albertans. So there's something to be said just for that. For example, I can tell you that in Germany, which has a reputation of being a leader in renewable energies, but for a while, at least at some point in the last 5 years or so, Germany's carbon emissions per capita, per unit energy produced, were at an all-time high. And that's because they brought so much intermittent renewable energy online. At the same time, they needed the baseload power. But the coal plants, where they were getting most of their baseload power, can't ramp up and down that fast. The furnaces can't heat up and cool down fast enough. So the coal operators took to burning lower quality coal so they could keep the furnace going without overproducing. And that actually raised their carbon emissions through the roof. So wind, in my opinion, all forms of renewable have a role to play in Alberta's energy transformation. And at the same time, we need to be careful not to bring too much intermittent power online without adjusting our grid accordingly.
And I guess one of the other things is not having the battery storage, being able to save the power so that you can use it at a time when the sun isn't shining.
No, geothermal is a baseload power. Once the power plant is up and running, it should provide, as opposed to wind or solar, which have capacity factors of 15 to 25%, geothermal power plant has a capacity factor of over 95%. So you turn it on and it's producing close to its nameplate capacity for 95% of the year. So no need for battery storage. In fact, we do look in a sort of more innovative, more experimental manner. We look at using geothermal wells as heat batteries. So instead of producing solar-powered electricity with a photovoltaic cell, we can produce solar electricity with a concentrated solar plant where the heat from the sun is concentrated, and then that's used to drive a steam turbine. Well, in the wintertime, we can store the excess heat that we collect in the summer in the geothermal well itself. And that has the advantage of sort of flattening out the solar curve, providing some storage, and it also augments the geothermal flow. So we can take a geothermal flow that might be a marginal electricity-producing resource and heat it up so it's hot enough to really drive a turbine.
So the result of your project in mapping these areas, are there any that stand out that would be the big winners, the ones who really should be trying this, putting the expense into it?
I think they were all actually big winners. We found useful things to do with the geothermal resource that is available in each of the areas. So in some places, for example, in the municipal district of Greenview, the temperatures are a little lower, but they have a lot of industrial development going on there. So we can use the heat to fuel some of their industrial processes, which also leads to significant greenhouse gas emission reductions. In Hinton, for example, we found the hottest and most abundant resource. So that's the area that we're really looking at to move full speed with the demonstration electrical power plant. But in all of the areas that we looked at, there are useful applications for the geothermal energy that's available. So we would actually like to see all five of the municipalities that helped us with this study take the next steps into developing something in the field.
What are the next steps for you?
So part of our job here at the university is to de-risk the technology, both from a technical perspective and from an economic perspective. Currently in Alberta, there's no legislation that governs the developing and operating of a geothermal plant. So even if we were to move full field, like, hey, let's go drill a big well and make a power plant, that's it's not illegal, but it's not legal. So we do need to buy ourselves a little bit of time for the government to work that stuff out. And we are, not us here on Earth and Atmospheric Sciences, but in AALES, the Agricultural, Life, and Environmental Sciences, as well as the Alberta School of Business. They're helping the government task force sort through this process. In the meantime, there is still some work we can do in the computer. So we just looked at the bottom hole temperatures and the porosity and the pressures of these wells. We can start to look at the well logs themselves and really start to narrow down where in each of these regions specifically we want to drill. So right now we've narrowed it down to a few thousand hectares in each area. We want to narrow that down to a point on a map, like this is where we want to drill. And there's a lot that we can do to achieve that in a computer. Barring that, we might need to look to acquiring some seismic lines. So there's been seismic lines shot all over the province. That starts to get a bit more expensive. And when we start to talk about that type of expense, we can also start to talk about drilling some test wells. Either new test wells, like, hey, we want to check out this particular area around Grand Prairie. Let's drill 10 slim hole wells here. Or maybe we can repurpose some of the wells that are already up there and use them for exploration. So while the government is sorting out these regulatory aspects, this is the type of work we're going to do and the type of planning that we're going to do. And hopefully we'll be able to attract some private investment and move the whole thing forward like that.
Thank you very much, Jonathan.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.